You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where here's a bear. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful bromantic, and I retroactively and proactively denounce anything anyone has ever said and ever will say on this show. That opening quip is a very obscure reference to something that nobody else might even remember or know. Back when I was at Clemson, there was a politician running for some sort of political spot in either North Carolina or South Carolina. I believe it was a North Carolina politician, which for some reason we still got those advertisements in Clemson. And there was a commercial where at the end of a commercial, there was a clip art graphic of a bear that came on screen and roared for no reason. They just did a whole political ad. And then the very end of the ad was just a bear came on screen and roared. So I just started saying at the end of things, here's a bear, because it was very, very random. This is, of course, related to the main story we're going to be talking about in this episode of The Midside. So stay around for a man versus bear discussion if you're not already sick of it over the internet for the past 2 weeks. And it is, of course, 2 weeks because I had to take a week off to bring a few of my girls down to South Florida to compete to be on the Florida dual teams to go to other states and compete against their dual teams. I had a couple girls qualify for the 16U team, so that was enjoyable, and had to miss out on all of you and talking into a microphone in the corner of my closet. So I think if those are my two choices, no offense, I'm going to pick going and coaching and having some girls qualify for a good life experience for them. Before we delve deeper into the farce from the past 2 weeks, so let me bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from his corner office, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, so you would say you're firmly back in the closet after a week of being out of the closet.
I suppose I set myself up, especially talking about bears.
Yeah. We've got some bear discourse coming up. But another achievement unlocked in the trek of home ownership. I actually, with working with a contractor to help me because I had to pour cement, built a deck. I have a deck in my back mud pit is now covered by an actual deck that I can step on. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, but how big is your deck?
It's pretty big. It's like 16 by 24. So it's a big deck. So I got a
That sounds like a good couch size.
Yeah. It kind of looks ridiculously like a stage right now before I put things on it, you know, because it's just a perfect rectangle. But Now that I've put things on it, it actually looks like a deck again. Because when I first taking pictures, I was like, oh, there's steps. And then because I don't have any railings around it because it's not that high off the ground, really. But
so
I was like, it looks
put
like a stage.
On your big deck.
Yeah. Definitely. So
is it gonna snow up there, and then you're gonna get some white dust on your big deck?
On my big deck. Yeah. I have been here a whole year and still have not seen actual snowfall where I am. It falls up on the mountain, but not here yet. But I've heard rumor that it does happen occasionally.
Well, in all seriousness, that's awesome. That's got to be a pretty good experience to actually be able to build something. I have a question about Northern California.
Uh-huh.
How hard did the government make it for you to build that? Did you have to file a lot of permits and things?
I just didn't. So please don't report me.
Technically,
it was a repair because there was a deck before, but it was just so rotted that I just redid the posts and things like that. Like, it was just...
So now we're in the deck of thesis category here.
We're in the deck of thesis category. Technically, there were several boards still there when I bought the house of the deck. So, but that's the funny thing, right?
Is it a new deck or a repaired deck?
Well, here's the thing. It may not matter, right? what if the previous owner, when they built this house, didn't get a permit for the deck in the first place? Then technically, I didn't do a repair. I built a new one. Yeah, it's those, the weird California stuff, it never ends, right? So, but don't worry, I'm still waiting for the, you know, the inspector out here is super nice. I've had him out before because I did some electrical work. I'm still waiting for them to finish the inspection for the electrical work. It's been done for like months now. But he's come out and inspected, but like, I don't know what the deal is. The between the power company out here, Southern California, here it's PG&E. PG&E, which is the number one cause of California wildfires, and the poor inspector out here, nobody can actually get the paperwork done. So I don't know if there's like a statute of limitations on this, but at some point I'll be like 80 years old and still waiting for PG&E and the poor city of white privilege out here to get their act together and actually sign off on my permit that the work has been completed.
So you have a deck but no power?
I have power. I have power. It's just the finals have not been signed. So I don't know what that means. It doesn't mean anything to me. I don't care about the paperwork, right? But somebody cares about the paperwork, just not me.
I'm just glad to hear your deck is working properly.
It's shiny and new. It's nice.
That might be a medical condition. You might want to.
It's nice, stiff redwood.
There you go. All right. Well, I think people are waiting for us to finish the paperwork of this segment. So let's do that and head into some Farsin, Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on. As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. We accept any and all support. And also, you can support us on Fountain. What is it called, William, when they like give us tips on Fountain and you can give us like 0.002 Bitcoin or whatever?
I hope they can give us 0.002 Bitcoin. But yes, they can. Go on to Fountain. If you find the show, you can, just while you're listening, you can send us sats. You can stream us sats.
Sats, that's it. Yeah. It's sats. But sats are in the form of what?
That's the lowest denomination of Bitcoin.
It's the lowest denomination of Bitcoin. What does that mean? Yep. Like someone sits on you? That's why they're called sats?
Satoshis, named after the pseudonym of the creator of Bitcoin. So,
Right. You said that before. Yep. You said that before. But what's the equivalent, like... Is that equal to like 0.0000002 Bitcoin, or what is it equal to?
I'll pull out the calculator. I believe it's like 100,000, or is it 1 million? It's 10,000 satoshis. Yeah, I think it's 10,000 satoshis to a BTC. But yeah, I think it's something like that. So I remember looking it up. It's like I'll tell you how much people have donated in the next segment.
Well, let's say this: if it's 10,000 satoshis to one Bitcoin, how about everybody gives us one satoshi, and we'll eventually get to one Bitcoin? Let's have that be a goal on Fountain.
I think it's more than 10,000. I think it's 100,000 or something like that.
Yeah, okay, fine, 100,000. If we ever get 100,000 satoshis for this show, I will consider this show a rousing success. So let's make that a goal, midsiders out there, new, old, come to us through Fountain. Let's get us 100,000 satoshis, 100,000 sats. I don't like the word sats, man. I don't. If it's satoshis, why isn't it sits? Why is it sats?
Because the name is Satoshi, S-A-T.
It's Satoshi, not Satoshi?
Yeah. S-A.
Why not Toshis?
T-O. I don't know. But maybe because nobody has a foot fetish?
But they have a sitting fetish? Like,
I don't know.
Just like taking a dump all the time? I don't know. I don't like it. It's weird. Let's move on to other weird stuff. First thing that you showed is... Can you hear that, by the way, right now? I think I put too many clothes in the washing machine.
Uh-oh.
Can you hear it?
Explode? I can't hear it.
Oh, okay, good. All right. So the first thing you... shared is somebody's put up a portal, quote unquote, between New York City and Dublin. Is this portal in Times Square, William?
I don't remember where it was, but the important part were the memes. That was the important part.
Well, right. So as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is just a live webcam, right?
Yeah, it's a live webcam, but it's two-sided, right? It's live right. in both Dublin and New York.
Right, and for some reason, people thought, I don't know what they thought with doing this, but it turned into inevitably what it would turn into, and it's, you put a live camera, and the average person is going to do what, William?
Show their cock.
Pretty much. I mean, yep. I don't think they've done that because that's illegal, but
I have one showing an ass. I saw someone mooning the camera, so it has to have been done already.
Wait. So can you watch this too? Like, you don't have to be in New York or Dublin. You can also see both.
No, I've been seeing people posting videos of people standing in front of it doing ridiculous things. So.
I don't know. You're the one who wanted to share this. To me, this is just like, okay, you know, this is like novel technology. Like,
or is it's this not novel even technology? Novel.
People think it's novel, but it's not.
Yeah. I like the aesthetic of it, and I like the idea of it. Because making it big
looks
and
like
look
the Guardian on the Edge of Forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The funny thing is this was already, you know, we've already tried stuff like this. And when you bring the internet into real life, everyone gets offended. And I give this only a couple weeks before it gets taken down or something like that. The memes are already dank. I saw really right away someone from Dublin showing a video of the Twin Towers back to New York on the camera. And there was already someone who mooned, you know, someone from Dublin, I think, mooned someone in New York because it was still sunshiny in New York and dark in Dublin. I think that's the only way that would work. I imagine this will devolve into some sort of political divide, debate, and there'll be signs everywhere. So, like, it starts out with everyone saying, I love New York, I love Dublin, but it's going to end with declarations of war across this portal. So, I don't know. Is that pessimistic of me, or is that just the way this goes?
No, I don't think that's pessimistic of you at all. I mean, as you pointed out, how long did it take before someone showed a picture of the Twin Towers back to New York City?
Not very long.
The other question I would have about this is, who do you think is drunker? The people in New York City or the people in Dublin?
I think it depends on the time of day. But yeah, that's a good question.
Final question about this. I'm saying that, William, because I'm trying to tease out why these locations. I kind of get New York City because they think they're the center of the world and the center of America, right? New York, Los Angeles type deal. But why Dublin, Ireland?
Dublin's kind of a lot of tech businesses are headquartered in Dublin. So, yeah, it seems odd, right? But having been to Dublin many times for my tech job, you know, Facebook's European headquarters is there. I think X's European headquarters are there. Like Apple's is there.
Okay, so it would have made more sense to do like San Francisco and Dublin.
Yeah, but what do Dubliners want to see about San Francisco? You're just a
they
live
need to
camera
see the poop
homeless
on the sidewalks. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of weird and people getting offended, let's talk about what I'm sure everybody is wondering what we're going to talk about, or at least want to hear us talk about, is the Tom Brady roast. This was a live 3-hour special on Netflix. By the way, I didn't realize it was 3 hours when I started watching it. I watched it live and then it just kept going. To a certain point, my wife was like, is this still going? Why is this not over yet? William, did you watch it?
No, I didn't watch it.
So you don't know anything about it or anything?
I don't know anything. I'm approaching it virginal.
Okay. So, look, I thought it was pretty good. They had a bunch of people speak on it. They had Edelman. They had Gronk. They had Drew Bledsoe. They had a bunch of comedians. Jeff Ross, as always. Nikki Glaser. Then they had a bunch of no-name comedians. Some of them were funny. Ben Affleck spoke on it. The big one for me was Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick came out and he made a very, very funny joke about he was happy to be here at the roast of Tom Brady, not to be confused with the roast of Bill Belichick, also known as Apple TV's 10-part docuseries, The Dynasty, which was very funny. And then my favorite part of the whole thing, besides, if you ever get a chance, just watch the Gronk segment. Because if you want to see just Gronk being pure Gronk, and what I mean by that is, he at a certain point just went off teleprompter, I'm pretty sure, and was just saying whatever he wanted. And just watching him just be ridiculous was funny. But my favorite part was Bill Belichick being Bill Belichick. And what I mean by that is, he became an anti-roaster. So there were a bunch of Patriots sitting up there that you wouldn't know unless you were a Patriots fan, one of them being Rodney Harrison. And you know how to roast, William, you're supposed to talk about each person who's up there. Well, most of these players got ignored the whole time. But then Bill Belichick starts talking about them, and literally, rather than making fun of Rodney Harrison, he just talked about how he should be in the Hall of Fame and how much of a travesty it is that he isn't in the Hall of Fame. So I just found that funny, not in a ha-ha way, in a laughing out loud way, but I found that funny in the way of, everyone would think Bill Belichick would be the biggest jerk of them all and be able to roast everyone very easily, but then who is the one that actually uses the platform to praise someone? I found that very funny.
Interesting.
But that also leads me into a question I want to ask about this, which I think we can best set up by talking about who wasn't listed. Who did I not name that you would think comedy and the Patriots, who would you think would be at a Tom Brady roast?
Gilbert Gottfried.
Well, that would be amazing because he's dead.
Yeah.
So if we could bring him back from the dead, that would be tremendous. I can't believe he's dead, by the way. But no, which comedian?
Bill Burr.
Bill Burr, right? You would have expected. My wife actually got mad at one point because they were like, I'm bringing out a very special guest. And she thought it was going to be Bill Burr and it was Ben Affleck. And she was like, why Ben Affleck? Right. But actually on the Rich Eisen show, Rich Eisen asked Bill Burr about him not being there. This is what Bill Burr had to say.
I did wonder about this when I heard you were going to be on. First thing I thought of was, if you were asked, would you have been on the dais to roast Tom Brady?
I don't know. No, I wouldn't.
Because
I feel like that's what happened to him during his career. I don't think I ever saw anybody achieve the level that he achieved while getting all of this crap from an astoundingly cheating organization in the Indianapolis Colts. I think he's gotten enough crap. I mean, I can't even get into half the stuff that the Colts were doing. I mean, to have your owners sitting on the competition committee and have them make the way we cover their receivers illegal, and then you steal our offense so you can win a Super Bowl. When you have like crowd noise when Tom's on the field and it's like skipping and you have to shut it off. Have you ever heard of an owner of the losing team conducting an independent investigation and it's upheld? Like, shouldn't Roger Goodell be like, don't go over my head. I conduct. And all of it was upheld. So, like, I think that guy's gotten enough. I'm like, trying to think of, like, people on his level, like the Jeters, the Jordans, and all of them. People are like, oh, my God, isn't this amazing? And Tom's whole time, they're, like, weighing footballs. And even ESPN, they made up that crap about us filming a practice, and then we proved that it wasn't true. And they retracted it on Twitter at like 2 a.m. So I had no interest in giving this guy any more crap than he did. And then all the ugly bastards out there were all excited when his marriage went south because they can't even approach the local hottie in a townie bar. And it makes them feel better. You know, and Peyton looks like a number 2 pencil. So nobody felt intimidated by him. And that was basically it. It's just like, all right. Let's have a bunch of people go out there and make fun of the fact that his marriage crumbled. I mean, I don't want to do that.
This could have been your bit. You could have gotten up there and been the anti-Tom Brady roaster.
Well, you know what? They asked me to do it a couple of years ago when they first were going to do it, and I was editing a movie, and I just didn't have time. And then this time through, they didn't ask me, and I was really all right with that.
Mm-hmm. First of all, William, we can't let him be the anti-roaster because That's Bill Belichick's bit, right? But second of all, what do you think about what Bill Burr is saying here? I mean, the idea that I know that objectivists love saying humor is destructive, right? You can't use it to praise someone. Yet in our culture, the roast is supposed to be this esteemed event that you only get when you've reached a certain level. Yet Bill Burr seems to be contradicting that here. The idea that because of what Tom Brady's been through, he doesn't deserve to be roasted. And how is it funny to make fun of someone because their marriage fell apart? And he seems to have a little bit of, he's talking about hatred of the good here, right? Where he's saying it's all these people who have low self-esteem and are jealous of Tom Brady, envious of him, that would want to see him roasted. Do you think Bill Burr is right here?
I think there's an element of truth to it. Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the tradition of the roast comes from, and the reason you have it be some people who know the person really well is, and we've talked about this before, is because guys bond over this kind of ragging on each other, right? So a good roast can be entertaining, and yes, it is destructive, but it's like, it's one of those things. It's like play fighting as a kid, between boys, right? It's destructive in the sense that you're fighting, but it's a bond. It's sort of a male bonding thing, right? So I think that's kind of where it comes from.
Right. It's destructive of things that could be a big deal, but you make them not a big deal by making fun of them. Like exactly. Where they're making fun of Gronk for being dumb, right? It's like, oh, you know, Gronk's not really dumb, so it's funny to make fun of people's perception of that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it is destructive, but I think that doesn't make it necessarily bad, right? But in this case, I think what Bill Burr is saying is like, maybe is it true also that, would you say Bill Burr knows Tom Brady so well that he would be able to participate in this kind of thing, right? Or is it more like this is a hero of his and he doesn't want to participate in that sort of thing, right? I think that's kind of an aspect of it as well.
Well, yeah, I think that's what he was saying. I think it's that, you know, and this is one of the things that I think I have in common with Bill Burr and why I connect with his comedy so well and so many people see similarities. I mean, even in this rant he went on here with Rich Eisen, do you think that sounded like me? Things I would say?
I think so. Are you saying you're as funny as Bill Burr?
No, I would never dare to say. That's like, say, are you saying you can throw the football as well as Tom Brady? No, I would never dare. I would never dare to say such a thing. What I'm saying is, why didn't they fucking roast me, huh? Greatest fan of all time. Roast me. No. I'm saying is, like, when you know the reality of it, and like he's saying, when there was so much negativity his whole career, why are we at the point now where we're now being negative towards him again? And I think what he's really saying is, this roast is obscuring everything that happened and is making everything seem okay. I mean, Tom Brady was the only one who had a joke about any of the stuff that mattered that Bill Burr was talking about. Tom Brady said that they paid $20 million to investigate Deflategate to see if he deflated footballs. And he said, if they had just given me $20 million, I would have just said I did it. I would have told them I did it. Right, he's not actually admitting to it or not. People are like, is this an admission by Tom Brady? No, the joke is that it's so stupid that he would have just taken the $20 million to just say he did it and he would have moved on with his life rather than going through the absurdity
of the
investigation, the farce they went through. Yeah. And I think that's what Bill Burr was saying when he was saying, what are we going to do, just make fun of his marriage ending? Like, there's so much more, and this is where I think Bill Burr is such a great comedian. There's so many more farcical things about what happened with Tom Brady's career that he realized people were going to miss the point and he didn't want to be involved in that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I definitely think so.
Okay, so now let's move on to some other farce. Let's follow up on some farce before we get into some new stuff. So first thing we want to follow up on here, William, is this is something you put in the group thread here, and it's all about these protests on these campuses in regard to Free Palestine or whatever they're trying to do. And remember how I talked about how there's more going on with these protests, and it's not the same way back in the day where it was college students and everything, where this has sort of been hijacked. Did we even bring up the idea of paid protesters and things like that?
Well, we've known that's been around. Rush Limbaugh used to cover this a lot during the Clinton era, right? There were a lot of these. It was mostly union folks back then that were bussed in to protest. They didn't even know why they were protesting. They were just bussed in, handed signs. And this was happening during the Clinton era, during the Newt Gingrich's contract with America stuff. Was the first time I really became aware of it. But yeah, we've talked a little bit about this, that there's all these groups that are, not to sound like a conspiracy, because it's not a conspiracy. It's just how this works, how politics works. There's a bunch of these charitable organizations and political organizations and PACs and action committees and things like that all just kind of are looking for some place to protest, right? And for some reason, this one is the one that's excited everyone the most right now.
Well, they're looking for the ones that are going to cause the most destruction. And I really believe that. I really use that word intentionally. They're looking for the ones that not just get them attention, but also cause the biggest uproar in the society, in harming things. And I think this one was because they wanted it to seem like, oh, this is what the youth wants. This is what college students want. You know, they wanted to draw that link. Because where were the stories that originally came out like, oh, Kent State, connecting it to Kent State?
They
wanted that link to Vietnam and things like that. Well, not shockingly, I'm going to read from the Daily Mail here. The leader of the recent protests at Columbia University has been revealed as the 40-year-old son of millionaire ad execs who lives in a four-story Brooklyn townhouse. Now, I want to be clear about the use of the word leader here. I don't know if there's one specific leader. I don't know where they're getting that from. They even hear link to the New York Post, who says he's one of the leaders.
I think he was the one that was holding the person hostage, right? The janitor or whatever. I think he's in the picture preventing the janitor from leaving the building. I think that's...
Yeah. Well, that's what it says. It says he goes by Cody Carlson and Cody Tarlow. He was arrested and charged with burglary and illegal entry after he storms Columbia's Hamilton Hall and renamed it Hind Hall. That's what you're talking about, where he was holding the janitor hostage, right?
Yep.
And it says the accused, who is described as a longtime figure in the anarchist world by officials, was also arrested for allegedly attacking a police officer during the violent G8 protests in San Francisco in 2005. So this guy's been at it for a long time.
Never be a beta. Never, ever do it. It is death.
That was probably a good use of that drop. But he might be being paid, but he probably also doesn't need to be paid based upon who his parents are. And also, I don't really agree with calling him an anarchist. Right, a longtime figure in the anarchist world. The idea that these people leading these protests want anarchy. They don't want anarchy. They want to prop up a different form of structure, a different governmental organization.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me here, though, William, is like I said, this guy is 40 years old, and he's acting like he is a protester at college. There's something terribly wrong with our society that this is... I don't want to say normal, but this is something that happens.
This is like, isn't this kind of the Antifa left-wing equivalent of like the Oklahoma City bomber guy? Although he was younger, wasn't he? He wasn't 40. I don't even remember how old he was when he did that. But this is kind of what I'm trying to say is this is mentally deranged if you're this age and doing this stuff. Shouldn't it be considered that way?
I would think so. It says McVeigh was 27 when he did that.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about, like, because let's think about what this guy is allegedly accused of doing. He storms a building, holds hostages. Like, this is absolute batshit crazy things, right? And he's, I don't know. This seems... Justin, can you imagine, because we're a little older than this, can you imagine storming a building and holding someone hostage in the name of any political ideal at this age? You know what I mean? Like, it would be absurd in today's culture, right?
Dude, I work out 5 times a week, and I eat healthy, so I am, like, in better shape and have more energy than most people my age, and all I can think about is how exhausting this would be. Like,
yeah.
Dude, first of all, you have to hang out around college students. Second of all, you have to be angry all the time or pretend to be angry all the time about something that is happening halfway across the world. And third of all, I then have to storm a building. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, I want to go to bed, man. All right, so let's move on to something else that I can speak to how it affects and update here. Remember when we talked about the student from Matanzas High School who attacked a teacher's aide because the teacher's aide took away his Nintendo Switch?
Yeah.
Or was it? Yeah, it was Switch.
This was absolutely another crazy story. What kind of response did we expect from this? I think we covered that the boy was going to probably sue, and I think that's our follow-up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's our follow-up, but I think it really brings into light, into focus, into the crosshairs here, really what the issues are, and I think there's an irony here. The irony here is when you hear that the boy is suing the school district when he's the one who assaulted the employee, you're like, fuck him, right? Like, who are you, right? But I think ultimately what the lawyers, one of the things the lawyers ask for actually points out the flaw in the system that even led to this and is one of the most pervasive problems in public schools. So I'm going to read here from an article. Brandon Depo was arrested for aggravated battery and is facing up to 30 years in prison for assaulting an employee at Matanzas High School. So at first blush, William, after having seen the video and everything, you see that and you're like, that makes sense, right? That seems fair.
Yeah. The violence was definitely there to support it, right? To support a charge of assault.
According to the Daily Mail, the 18-year-old teen, who is over 6 feet tall and weighs 270, is suing the Flagler County School District for failing to meet his needs after 59-year-old teaching aide Joan Nadick took away his Nintendo Switch. So again, this looks even worse, right? 59-year-old being attacked by an 18-year-old who's 6 feet tall and 270. In the suit, Deepa's lawyers claim that the Matanzas High School employees knew of his disabilities, triggers, and problem behaviors, along with his history of wrongdoing, including spitting, shoving an aide, intimidating school staff, and shouting at his teachers. It also highlights that because Deepa is a large black male, he is subjected to misperceptions and racism. Now, there's two things here, William. One, my first question is, why is he in the school if they know about all of his triggers and problems and his history of wrongdoing, right? And then the second thing is, well, we have our answer. When it says a large black male, he is subjected to misperceptions and racism. Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, I've routinely said on the show, one of the issues with public school is the idea that everyone has to have the exact same education because it's a right. So yeah. The idea that means it's separate but equal unless it's exactly the same and everyone's in the same classroom. And this is an example of it when they start playing the race card.
Is it a misperception if you've literally assaulted teachers before? Is it a misperception to think that you could be violent? How can... Justin, I am flabbergasted by the contradictions in just this... What this defense is comprised of. It is...
Well, that's the shocking thing.
Yeah, it is true at the same time. Both things are true, apparently, at the same time. That he's being mistreated because they're not treating him the same as other students. But then he should be treated specially because he has a disability and he has triggers and he has predictable bad behavior. And then it's also true that you shouldn't treat him differently because he's... What? Like, you're not supposed to treat him differently because he could get violent at any time if you do? So, right. What a catch-22. So you have to treat him differently because he can be violent, but you can't treat him differently because he's been violent in the past. What is it?
Right.
What are you supposed to do?
Right. Well, okay, now, what you just said, dude, is the catch-22 I am in as a teacher. Right? I have a girl in one of my classes, I think I've spoken about her before, but what I've been said about her is she thrives on bad behavior. So what I've been told is to ignore her when she acts out. Because she thrives on the not bad behavior, bad attention.
Yeah, the attention.
The negative attention. So my catch-22 is I want her to stop acting out, but when she acts out, I can't respond to her. This is the same thing here. Right in the next paragraph here even notes it. The lawsuit noted that the school and staff working with him in the district knew that the electronics, specifically the Nintendo and its use on school campus, was a trigger for escalating behaviors. Reads the filing, which describes the teen as a ticking time bomb whose needs, despite concerns and warnings, were completely disregarded by the district. Isn't
Justin,
this what we were just talking about?
Who needs a switch to go to school?
Somebody who has mental health issues and shouldn't be in school.
Exactly. If you cannot meet the requirements of coming to school, if we have to treat him the same, then it doesn't make any sense, right? If we have to treat him the same as other students, then he should have to follow the same rules as other students. We don't get to tailor the rules to fit arbitrary demands by students, right? Like, that's not how that works, right? Like, I can see modifying things for certain aspects, and maybe that's what they're trying to say here is like, oh, he has a mental disability, apparently, right? So we have to modify it. But that doesn't make any sense. Like, the learning environment has like there are rules of reality about the learning environment, right? And we can't violate those rules.
Well, right. But think about it this way. If they're saying this catch-22 where he has to be in the same classroom and he has to have special treatment, this is where I have sympathy. Right. But this is where I have sympathy for all the other kids. Because if the rule then becomes he has to be allowed to use his Nintendo Switch or he becomes violent, why, as a normal kid who's not going to get violent if you take away my Switch, am I not going to bring my Switch in and just keep playing it?
Yeah, I don't know.
And why, as a teacher, am I going to be like, you know what, you can't. So because you're healthy, I don't even want to use the word normal. I just want to say healthy. Because you are healthy, I have to take that away from you. But because this person is not healthy, I have to allow him to continue to use it. See how it then becomes unfair for even the regular students, for the normal average person? And I said the word normal, but you get what I'm saying. But this is where, William, what the lawyers asked for is actually rational. Mm. And it's amazing amongst all these contradictions that they get to the point. Deepa's lawyers are seeking compensatory education and placement in a behavioral therapeutic school at the school district's expense, as well as covering the cost of any out-of-pocket costs, including tutoring fees and mental health services. And isn't this the real issue here, William? That if we are going to say education is a right and everyone should get the same education, does that not mean that same education would have to be not the same method of delivery? It would be different delivery for different needs, in that every person would require a different cost. However, schools are trying to do this extreme one size fits all where they're paying. It's one size fits all because they're trying to pay the exact same amount per student. Whereas if they were really applying the principle, wouldn't what this lawyer say be true? Wouldn't it be better to send someone like him to a separate school that would cost more?
Yeah, it would make more logical sense, but it always gets back to where are the parents, right?
Right.
And where's the community to help a parent who's in this situation? And how do we get in this situation right. in the first place, right? Like, this is way down the causal chain, right? Where's the dad? I think we said that before, right?
Right. Well, this is all, as we're saying, it comes from the causal chain of public education.
Yeah.
Whereas when education is public, this is necessarily where we're going to end up, because the lawyer is essentially asking for private education funded by the government, is it not?
Yeah. Yep. He's asking for a voucher.
Yes. Crazy. Crazy. Okay. Let's talk about some new farce here. A couple other ridiculous things. The first one is a story in regards to Oprah Winfrey caught my attention this week, not because of Oprah, but because of her speaking on the diet industry that she's saying she's a part of. So I'm going to read all of this here, William, and then we'll respond to it. Because I think, per usual, in her attempt to make amends here and fix things, she continues to double down on the same mistake, which is the ultimate. That's what the farce is here. You know, we had the contradictions last story that we were updating, and now we have the contradictions here that creates the irony. The talk show host went on to say that she acknowledges that I have been a... So this is about Oprah saying we need to fix dieting culture, right? She says, I have been a steadfast participant in this diet culture through my platforms, through the magazine, through the talk show for 25 years and online. I've been a major contributor to it. I cannot tell you how many weight loss shows and makeovers I have done, and they have been a staple since I've been working in television. We've been criticized, we've been scrutinized, we've been shamed, Winfrey said on Thursday, and we've been told that unless we meet a certain standard of size, that we didn't deserve to be accepted or even to be loved. Well, who's telling them that? Aren't we telling everybody the opposite nowadays?
I don't know who. Yeah, I don't know who is saying this, right?
But this is sort of... This is sort of hinting towards...
Is this a narcissistic reversal? I keep wondering about that. I think in the sort of fat community, whatever we want to call them, plus size community, whatever they call themselves, the fat acceptance community.
Whales.
The
I
whale
call them
community.
Whales.
there's a lot of narcissistic reversal here, right? Where it's like, like they're saying like, oh, they're telling us we don't want to be loved. No, it's your narcissism that's doing that, right? It's not.
Right. Right. And I think that's sort of where this is sort of heading, right? Because look, then she says, now the article says, Winfrey told the audience she is working to shift the conversation towards self-acceptance. She took a moment to share what pushed her to lose the 67 pounds in the first place. And this is interesting, William. What she says made her share it in the first or lose it in the first place, which I think points to the narcissism you're talking about. Joan Rivers, who was hosting the Tonight Show for Johnny Carson at the time, asked her, how did she gain the weight? And Winfrey says, I didn't know what to say. Noting it was her first ever experience with national television. I just ate. I ate a lot. And she said, no, I don't want to hear it. You're a pretty girl and you must lose the weight. And Winfrey says, that was the start of a vicious cycle of yo-yoing that ended with that liquid diet, where I literally starved myself for months. And this was her ultimate conclusion. When Oprah Winfrey's ultimate confusion is, whatever path, let's stop the shaming. Allowing people to process what they've been internalizing for years. That's what this conversation is about. William, I'm saying it's really about what you're saying. She's talking about saying she wants to make it about self-acceptance, but it's still people who haven't accepted themselves, and they're looking for short-term solutions to a long-term problem. The word diet is in itself the problem. If you need to go on a diet because, like, you have an injury or a sickness, and that's what you need to change in order to get back to an equilibrium, then that's what you need to do. However, if your equilibrium is wrong, you need to adjust your equilibrium. Or to say it another way, if your lifestyle is harming you, that you're 67 pounds overweight, you need to find a new lifestyle so that you are not 67 pounds overweight anymore. But they don't want to do that. That's the narcissistic reversal. That it becomes, oh, it's your fault that you're tricking us into, you're forcing us into these short-term tricks, this dieting, but the dieting is all part of the narcissism.
Yeah. Yep. And I think she's left the Weight Watchers board, right? And sold her shares to, or give them to charity or something, the Smithsonian. And now she's on the drug bandwagon, right? So she's still
Ozempic, yeah.
Yeah. And hey, nothing against Ozempic. I think there is some aspect of intervention, like technological intervention that I think can help this situation, right? Because I don't
certainly,
think that
if you are to a point where you are so unhealthy and so overweight that you need surgery or medicine to fix that,
absolutely,
I would say get that 100%. But don't take Ozempic and be like, oh, well, I can eat whatever I want as long as I take Ozempic.
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
Yeah.
Only one 100%?
100%. Like, I love it, you know?
There you go. There's both of them.
All right, so let's head into our final bit of farce here. And this is something that was going on in the internet, I think, a couple weeks ago. I don't know if it's still continuing. I'm not, this is where, you know, we were talking about the protester who's 40 years old, and he's just like, wants to go to sleep. I'm not really involved in these internet conversations as much. The most I do is, like, I read Reddit to sort of witness some of the farce. Although there is something that was, I saw on Reddit that was farcical that actually connects to this. No, I didn't actually read a response to this. I just saw another post, and I thought it was connected to this false perception here. This, of course, goes back to things that we're not really allowed to say or supposed to say. It goes back to discussing the way men are mistreated and misunderstood, right? We're not really supposed to talk about that, the attack on masculinity.
Yeah.
But apparently there was a discussion about who's more dangerous, a man or a bear. And here's I found an article, it's an Australian article, but I thought this paragraph sort of summed things up pretty well. When pop culture site Screenshot took to the streets earlier this month to ask women, would you rather be stuck in a forest with a man or a bear? The response, a bear, came resoundingly and without hesitation. And it quickly went viral on TikTok, where women agreed, citing reasons like, if I were attacked by a bear, people would believe me. I've never heard of a bear holding anyone captive for decades, and bears are easier to predict.
Decades.
I'd be impressed if a bear held someone captive for decades. Yeah. Also, what men are holding people? But this goes. This is. Oh my God! Wait. This is where it goes into the whole issue of the vilifying of men. And if men respond and say that you're vilifying men, women then say you're gaslighting them.
Yeah.
And is that not the narcissistic reversal you were just talking about?
Yes. 100%.
100%.
Yeah.
So before I go into this more in depth, what do you have to say about this, William?
Well, I think that we have to say that this, I am disappointed in the feminists asking this question. They are doing what we are not allowed to do, which is.
But let's take the heteronormative approach here,
because bear here means a usually larger, hairy, gay man. So would you rather have a gay man or a straight man? Now, I think it's a totally different question, but. But bears aside,
is forest a euphemism too?
I don't know. I'm 100% queer free, so I'd have to look it up.
Can we make it into a euphemism to change this question completely?
Completely, yeah, maybe. Yeah, let's go to a gay bar, and I'll do a man on the street, Justin, and we'll ask the gays, would you rather have a straight man or a bear in the woods? And I think we'll get a different question. I think most of them would say both.
You know what's weird is that was one of my first thoughts when hearing about man or bear. I was like, is this some sort of like gay thing? I don't know where that puts me on the kidsy scale, but
I don't know. Does this not show a sort of learned helplessness sort of behavior? Meaning, yes. Like, If we actually think of this rationally, wouldn't you rather, if you're stranded, lost in the woods, wouldn't you rather have another human being that can help you? Right? Like that, it to me, it just doesn't make any rational sense whatsoever, right? And then even this article, Justin, it's by a queer, lesbian, something, it's an LGBTQ alphabet soup person, and it just seems like such a strange perspective, right? Now, I'm not saying we should 100% discount it, right? Like, this is indicating a problem, right? If your relationship to just a random stranger man is, I would rather this be a bear, it's really irrational, right? This is different than, oh, it's at night and I'm walking through, you know, I'm walking through and see someone shady looking across the street, right? And across the street, sorry. This is different than that, right? The sort of awareness of danger. But Justin, haven't we talked before about how it seemed very strange? One difference that a lot of people have noticed is men tend to be much more aware of their surroundings than women, and how much that might be a indicator of like just some difference, right? Like the whole idea that is this a psychological mechanism, right? That we've been teaching people, like, just be afraid of all men, right? Like, how does that help you be safer is really what I'm trying to drive at here, right? If you're just going to always be afraid of all men, like, how does that help you be safer? If it's literally all men, you're not going to distinguish between the dangerous situations and the not dangerous situations.
Well, you're driving towards exactly where I was going to go with this, where I think this is the combination of two things. One is the combination of the premise of what you just said, where it's all men are dangerous and all men are evil. And statistically, that's just not true. Right?
I mean, the idea of... Yeah, let's think of it logically, just for one second. Humans are capable of being Hitler. Therefore, we should treat all humans like Hitler.
Right.
Like potential Hitlers, right?
Right.
Not to do that. That's the Hitler argument, right? But that's the argument they would use, right?
Right, and it's even more fundamental than that. A human has acted like Hitler, therefore humans are bad because a human has acted like Hitler. That's the premise they're using.
Yeah, yeah.
There have been men who have done horrific things. There is no arguing that. There are men who continue to do horrific things. There are no arguing that. But that, there's no arguing that. But that is the argument they are using, that because of that, men are dangerous.
Yeah. Yep.
This is the equivalent of, William, would you rather drive on a street further from your home or closer to your home? Because statistically, where do most accidents happen, William?
Yeah, near your, within a couple miles of your house. Yeah.
Why?
Because that's where you most frequently drive.
Right. Well, it's the same thing here, where it's the idea of who are the ones who commit sexual assault? Men, because they're the ones who are most capable of committing sexual assault physically. Does that make sense? It's not women going around sexually assaulting women. They're not equipped to do that. They would have to get other tools involved. Also, they're not typically stronger than other women.
Well, I think you're forgetting.
As Commander-in-Chief, I was proud to have ended the ban on transgender Americans.
You can't forget our transgender Americans, though.
Yeah, I mean, I was being oppressive by not including the transgender Americans. I apologize. Okay. I disavow everything that's ever been said or will be said on this show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly 100%. Why I put that in the front. That's exactly. This show should just become you pressing the drops the whole episode.
100%.
You have to combine this with the fact that women tend to be more emotional thinkers initially. I'm not saying women aren't capable of reason. I'm not saying they can't be more logical than men. But I'm saying initially, in a situation, men tend to respond logically and women tend to respond emotionally. Look at how we're even analyzing this and how they're analyzing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They would say we're gaslighting them because we're pointing out all of these logical
things. We're invalidating
things.
Their emotional thinking. Right.
Right.
By right. And that's I think that is, that hints at another fundamental here, right? Is that in discussions of this sort of like gender war topics, quote unquote, is that every time you can see it in the online, you know, discourse back and forth, when the men inevitably try to approach this logically, they're told they're gaslighting when it's just a different approach to the problem, right? And you have to have, we've talked about this when we talk about parenting, you have to have this more feminine approach with the more masculine approach, right? You can't just have a purely logical approach without considering the emotions of the situation. And you cannot just use emotions to guide your actions because that's not how it works, right?
Well, in a situation where it's survival in the woods, that's where the emotional approach is less valid and the logical approach is more valid.
Exactly.
And William, the problem with calling it gaslighting is that it's not contradicting reality. Gaslighting is when you convince someone that their perception of reality is false because there's a fault. There's another reality going on that is not going on.
Right. That's what gaslighting is. I think that there's a mistake that a lot of men make mostly, but you know, women make this mistake too, is when you're arguing logic, it can be perceived as invalidating emotions, right? Rather than, you know, a lot of guys will rationalize their emotions, and I don't mean this in the rationalization sense. I mean, like, they will look at their emotions more logically, right? And this can lead to its own errors, but like, they'll say, "Oh, I'm afraid. Why? What's going on?" Right? That's much more common to think about. Is there a reason for me to be, like, a guy will think, "Is there a reason for me to be afraid?" Much quicker, I think, than the average woman, let's say, right? Instead, you know, I think the instinct, and I'd be interested in what people think on Discord, the instinct for women out there often is, what's the cause? Like, what's the thing? Like, it's not the why, right? Why am I this way? Why am I feeling this? Is less the first instinct, I think.
Well, right. And first of all, William, that's why women tend to be more afraid of horror movies. And the stereotype used to be you took a woman to a horror movie so that she could feel protected by you, right? Because the man didn't react the same way to the horror movie the woman did. Yeah. But this is also, William, why I am going to invalidate their emotions. And I am saying I am invalidating their emotions. I'm not invalidating the sense that they feel fear, but I'm invalidating their emotions as a response to a stimuli that does not actually exist. And what I mean by that is, yes, in the forest, it is proper to fear for your safety. In the sense that if you don't know how to survive, a forest in itself is not scary. A right. forest is dangerous if you do not know how to survive properly. Now, I'm assuming from everybody answering this question, they all don't know how to survive properly because we're living in the internet urban age. Correct? We're married to our technology.
Yeah.
Therefore, they feel danger. What I am invalidating is that the emotional response is stronger to the man as dangerous than the bear as dangerous. And I'm invalidating that because they hold faulty premises. Okay? There was a post on Reddit I saw that a woman said, my fiance doesn't understand that wanting to fuck me isn't a compliment. And she says, I don't think that this is a compliment. Men can want to fuck literally anyone if they're horny enough. I want him to tell me that I'm aesthetically pleasing. Again, William, this is what you're talking about. There is no why behind the thought process. They are operating from the premise that men indiscriminately want to take sex from women, and they will do whatever they can to get it. And that is why this is dangerous. And this is what men are not educated enough to properly respond to in this conversation. All they can say is, nuh-uh, men aren't dangerous.
When I think about that, Justin, like, there are no doubt men who are that way, right? But why are you dating a man if you think this is true about your particular man?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Because they think, if your premise is all men are that way, well, then if you want to date a man, you have to simply accept that about him.
That's so twisted. Do you see what I'm saying? Right? Yeah.
Right.
That's like,
you'll never find a man who's not that way.
That's the flip side of the incel coin, right? I mean,
yeah. Yes. That's what I've been saying for years. Yeah. Thank you. Incels are just male feminists. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the flip side of the incel coin. If you think that all men just want to take sex in any sort of way, why would you ever date a man? Right? Like, it doesn't make if this has to go back to the Puritanism of sex, right? The Puritanistic view of sex, the mind-body dichotomy, right? Because it doesn't make if you find an individual man who values you and values sex with you, and you hear I want to fuck you as just an animalistic thing, it doesn't make any sense to me. How can you be in love with that person? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, right. Exactly. How could you be in love? Because they're not looking at love as a human idea. Now, what this comes from, William, is these kids, when they're young, have a hard time telling the difference between physical attraction and sexual attraction. Yeah. And what I mean by that is there's a conflation when you're young that someone is good looking. That means they must be morally good. They must be virtuous. And I don't mean virtuous in the Puritan sense. I mean, whatever your values are, living in line with them. And therefore, I am attracted to them. So when you're a kid, especially, you see someone physically attractive and you are sexually attracted to them. Or you say you see someone who's physically good looking and that automatically goes to sexual attraction. Now, theoretically, you should be able to learn past that. But they're not able to learn past that anymore because of these concepts of collectivism and these concepts of all women are a certain way and all men are a certain way. And that's how, as you wisely pointed out, you get these female incels, basically, and you get male incels. That's where this comes from, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't know. Look, I would never speak for you, but I see people that I think are good looking and I have zero sexual attraction to them because I don't know them. Or let me put it this way. I do not understand people who follow people on Instagram or pay for OnlyFans because to me, you know nothing about those people. Those are just pictures.
Yeah.
And it does nothing for me. It does not titillate me in any way. It does not excite me in any way. Maybe I'm just an old man now, but it does nothing for me. I'm just like, oh, there's a picture of a woman in a bathing suit on Instagram. Or there's a picture of a woman dressed in athleisure at the gym, which is the same thing as a bathing suit nowadays. But it doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, I think...
Especially online.
I think I can appreciate male beauty, right? Meaning masculine beauty, right? I can look at a picture and say, oh, that's a beautiful person, right? But I... And there is an aspect of erotic beauty, right? But you're bringing, it comes back to the, like you're saying, the character of the person is part of the sexual attraction, right?
Right.
So yeah.
Well, like you said, no dichotomy between mind and body, understanding they're one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing, right? Like, I think I've talked about before, it's probably many years ago. I've talked about the show about being out in Baltimore and, you know, being like, oh, that person is attractive. Like when I first came out, this is years and years and years ago, and then going up and talking to them and within like 5 minutes, like completely losing all attraction to the person, right? Because of just listening to what they wanted to talk about and what they're, you know, kind of the figuring out their, their values and being like, oh, okay, well, you know, I guess this person's not that attractive, you know?
Well, you want me based upon what you just said to make an even crazier argument? Are you ready here?
Yeah.
Isn't what you just said what's disgusting about pedophiles? Or whatever, hepophiles or people who are attracted to teenagers.
Yeah,
and what
I
mean by that is, can't you find you as a man who is attracted to men? Can't you find an 18-year-old man who you find attractive, but then you talk to him and he's just so young and different from you that there's no way they can be sexually attractive?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep.
Don't you think there are kids in high school who are good looking of both genders, but you talk to them and it's like they're in such a different world than you?
They're such a child. Well, yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, isn't that what makes adults who are attracted to them so disgusting?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then, are these people who are saying all men want to rape and murder women? Are these women who say that and these men who say that any different from pedophiles? No. Aren't they as morally reprehensible as pedophiles?
If you really believe this, and I don't know that these people really believe all of this, right? How much of this is just parroting the culture? But if you truly believe all men are this evil, then you should never have sex with a man, right? You should be a lesbian like the person who wrote this article, right?
Well, and it isn't that part of what's worrisome here? Mm-hmm. That we have people online trying to control these conversations, putting forward these ideas where they don't represent the majority of human beings?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, a lot to unpack there. I think we went into it. That's something for you all to reflect on. And as William said, maybe let us know about it in the Discord, which I will turn around and plug here after we hit the bumper for The Hopeful Bromantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. As always, as I was just saying, you can continue the conversation with us during the week. I think we've had a lot of interesting fodder this episode for you to talk to us about. To do that, you just go to themidside.com and themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link, and in there is the join Discord code. We just had Kodo Coder, Midsider Kodo Coder, join us in the Discord. It says wave to say hi. I am waving to you, but you cannot see that because this is an audio show, not a video show. So go ahead, join our Discord just like Kodo Coder did. I have, William, I have two reviews for this week. But here's the problem. Both reviews are similar. Because you mentioned something. And when you said it, it clicked. You said we're in the post-pandemic movie release stages right now. Do you want to explain that again a little bit?
Yeah, I think the pandemic, once the pandemic hit, all of Hollywood was shut down, right? We went through this immense turmoil, and the writer's strike happened, all this other stuff happened, and we're in this post-pandemic era where a bunch of shows got delayed, things got interrupted, and I think a lot of good people just left. A lot of good writers just left. And now we're in this stage where all of this shitty pre-production work that either didn't get done or was done terribly is now coming out, right? Like, these movie studios have to do something with this stuff, and they're just shitting out all this bad product.
I wouldn't even say bad product. I would say completely average product. And what I mean by that is, over the last 2 weeks, I saw two movies. I saw The Fall Guy and The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. I would like to read my one-sentence review of each and then just explain them briefly and just give a similar review, because I have a similar response to both of them. Appropriately, The Fall Guy owes its success to the performance of its lead, Ryan Gosling, even though his role was surely intended for Ryan Reynolds. The Fall Guy is about a stuntman who has to become an action hero because of the corruption that's actually going on in the industry and is on the specific set that he is involved with. So the other one, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, if you cross Dunkirk with Inglourious Basterds and decided to remove the epic action and profound dramatic scenes, this movie is what you would end up with. I need to add the word would there. I forgot to put the word would in my review. I'll have to edit that in a moment here. It stars Henry Cavill, however you want to say it. And it's set during World War II as a secret mission, sort of. I should have probably added the Suicide Squad in there as well. Secret mission during World War II to defeat the Nazis. Now, both of these premises, William, on their face, are not bad, right? You take Henry Cavill, you take Ryan Gosling, and you put them in action movies, and you fight Nazis, and you have a sort of comedic action approach behind a movie, what's going on and how the lead actor, is a jerk and everything that's going on and his relationship with the director for The Fall Guy, right? So did I not enjoy watching these movies? No, I enjoyed watching these movies, but there is nothing remarkable about them besides maybe a little bit of production value or the performance of Ryan Gosling. Beyond that, there's nothing about these movies that's going to stay with me for years. When we're talking about previously, like Elvis was a great movie, or we're talking about Oppenheimer was a great movie, or Zack Snyder's Justice League, those movies have things in them that are going to stick with you for their years. These are just, I saw this, it was entertaining, it was made with a level of competence, but there is nothing spectacular about it. Are there minor quibbles? Yeah, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare added some stuff that it just seemed like they wanted to have a black character and a woman character in there. So they added a plot line that seemed unnecessary. In The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, there was a lot of setup more than there was. Like I said, it seemed to be building towards an epic climax. And then the epic climax was, let's tow a boat out of the harbor. And The Fall Guy. I know, it's exact. I don't even remember visually the boat being towed out of the harbor. I just remember it was sort of like Star Trek on the bridge where it's like, and now we're towing the boat. Tow the boat faster. I'm just like, what is going on here? I enjoyed the movie. I don't want you to think otherwise. The Fall Guy. It was like they wrote the whole movie and they film the whole movie. And then they were like, wait, there's not enough connection between the romantic leads. So they shot another scene, inserted it earlier in the movie. And then you get to a later scene and you're like, wait, this scene makes no sense because of the earlier scene when they were in the car together on set. Now, did it ruin the movie? No, I still enjoyed the movie. But these are just the minor things that I think are reflective of what you're saying. That all of this stuff was done and then they tried to add other things to sort of fix it or save it or add to it. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. There's a level of competence here, but there's not a level of excellence here. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep.
Am I having a bad time? No. I don't know. I like going to the movies. I like leaving my house, going to the movies, seeing it on the giant screen. Like, that's fun for me. But I'm not falling in love with these movies. This is a year where, more than any other year, it's the activity more than the movies themselves. So look, both of these are solid bros. They're not terrible. They're not awesome. I wouldn't feel different towards you either way if you decided to see these movies or not. I will say, though, that I think The Fall Guy is more enjoyable than The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, simply because, like I said, the climax of The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare isn't that cathartic, and The Fall Guy provides more of the catharsis we're looking for in stories. All right, those are some movies that are out. Let's talk about some movies that are kind of come out in trailer takedown. I post the trailers in Discord, usually the Saturday before we record, so you can watch them whenever you want, before the episode, after the episode, or maybe during. You watch a trailer, we talk about it. You watch a trailer, we talk about it.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Thelma is the story of a very old woman, elderly even, legitimately elderly, who is scammed out of $10,000 and then, I think, goes on a quest. That's where the trailer kind of fell apart. The trailer sets up that, like, here's this woman who was scammed, and then I think she goes on a quest to get her money back. I don't know. It reminded me of how I talked about when I saw The Beekeeper, another example of, like, the writing sort of not being great in Hollywood, where it set up this premise and then went in a different direction with Jason Statham killing people. Whereas this actually seems to go on the premise. Except this isn't like an action movie. This is like a comedy drama. And it seems to be doing well on the independent circuit and everything. And you would look at this and you might think that this is a movie I wouldn't want to see. But here's the thing. William, I don't know why. This trailer, it seems benevolent to me. And the performances seem great. Believe it or not, I actually would watch this movie. Hug.
Yeah, I think part of it is, part of my interest in this is this is something I've dealt with in jobs, right? The people who getting hacked, right, as a computer security guy. So it looks interesting. It looks competent. It looks well done. It looks like a good independent movie. They did a good job with the trailer. So, yeah, I think I'm going to hug this.
Hug. Second trailer.
Mother Couch seems to me to be the inverse of Thelma. It's a horror movie. And I will say, I think it's inventive that they turn this into a horror movie. However, none of the characters in this are likable. So this is what I gathered. Ewan McGregor's mother, not his literal mother, the character he's playing's mother, goes to a furniture store when it's trying to get rid of, like, liquidate its assets, liquidate all its stock. And she sits on the couch and she refuses to move. So then he has to call his siblings and get them involved and get other people involved. But then all of a sudden there seems to be this imagery of, like, there's a conspiracy or there's evil going on. And the part that really, really turned me off to this movie was when I was like, she's an old woman. Just pick her up and take her out of the store. She's trespassing. She's squatting. This is illegal. And they show her being threatening, where she's like, if you try to do this, I'm going to do this. And if you try to carry me down the stairs, I'm going to drop myself and my head's going to burst open. And all I could think was, she's an old woman. Like, she can say she's going to do all those things, but ultimately, if she bites you, like, you can't stop her from biting you. Like, you can't figure out a way to, one of you hold her legs, one of you hold her arms, or you tie her arms together, like we can't get the police to handcuff her. It just seemed like there was a lot going on to turn this into a horror movie, and I appreciate the creativity of being like, what if there's an old lady who won't leave a store and stays on the couch? Especially because I recently read a story, there was a woman who used to sit in the Grand Floridian at Disney with a bunch of teddy bears. So I can kind of get where you would get an evil premise from this. I just think none of it is done proper. I think, like, if you had taken the premise of the old, crazy old lady in the Grand Floridian at Disney with her teddy bears, you could have done that one better than this. This seems like a lot of work to turn something that isn't a movie and isn't scary into a scary movie. Tackle.
Yeah, I think that the, you've hit the nail on the head with how the premise kind of breaks down. I think also there's, this is another one of those trailers that it gives away too much and not enough at the same time. Again, this has been a theme this year as well. We've talked about the themes of the movies being just meh. The trailers have been like somehow blowing this line of giving away too much and not enough at the same time. They give away enough of the premise where you're trying to understand it, and then, but it fails, right? Because you're not, like you said, it doesn't make any sense why they wouldn't just remove her, right? But then at the same time,
or could you at least pick up the couch? Like, you could even pick up the couch,
right? Yeah, you could just pick up the couch, yeah. I think also, Justin, wouldn't this have made more sense in, like, maybe like a Japanese culture where people are too polite and have too much respect for elders to do something like this, right? Where they would literally
That's what
be,
I'm saying.
Yeah, like, it would make sense, right? Like it wouldn't make sense. You'd be able to build tension and it not have to have this premise of, oh, I'll knock my head, right? It would be like, oh, this is like super uncomfortable. We have too much respect. We're not going to, you know, we surely will be able to convince them, right? But then you would slowly have more horror supernatural elements, you know, start to block them from being able to do it, right? And then other things happening, right? Like, then it would make more sense, the premise. But yeah, I think they kind of blew the premise by giving it away and not giving it away at the same time. But maybe it's it makes more sense in the movie, but it doesn't make sense at all in the trailer. So tackle.
Third trailer.
Twisters is the latest sequel / reboot nobody asked for, and I say nobody asked for because, William, I never got into Twisters as a kid. Like, I don't know. Like, I get it because
there was
like,
just
people
one
like, oh.
Twister, not Twisters. Twisters so, is this.
I
one.
Never got into the movie Twister as a kid. I apologize. Okay, I remember it was everywhere. I remember it's the last big thing Helen Hunt ever did because I don't remember shit Helen Hunt did after Mad About You and Twisters or Twister. Sorry, I apologize. Twister.
What did she do? Right. Twister after Contact? I don't remember the order now.
If you
oh,
think,
no, that was Jodie. Yeah, that's Jodie Foster. Who else was?
Right,
what other thing was she in?
Nothing. Name one other thing
I
Helen Hunt has done.
Yeah. Wow, I can't think of anything.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. But here's the thing: I get why people liked it because, like, they were like, "Oh," or why they were into it or hyping it because it's like, "Oh, Earthquake was a big movie. Let's do Tornadoes now." But again, William, I cannot get excited about a movie where people intentionally run into danger where there's no benefit to them, right? This movie is trying to portray it as this lady's a weather lady, and these other people are, I guess, trying to get famous because they're like Twister wranglers.
Chaser. Yeah.
Yeah, they're storm chasers, and that was in the original movie, right?
Yeah, yeah. But they were storm chasers. They were sort of citizen scientists, right?
All right. And maybe the storm chaser to be an influencer makes more sense in today's world. But yeah. I don't care. I literally don't care. Like, when a hurricane happens, you can move. When an earthquake happens, you can't. Earthquake makes sense as a premise because there's nothing you can do if you're in an earthquake. You have to leave ahead of time. Don't live there. That's why I left California, right? You don't want an earthquake?
Yeah,
leave.
The earthquakes were the reason. Yeah, that was why.
Right. Well, that was one of the reasons. It was not high on the list, but I'd put that in my top 10 reasons. Haven't I ever told the story of the earthquake that went on for a minute? I was like, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You never heard that one?
Yep.
So, no, that's one of the reasons, right? But a twister, like, isn't like, there's a tornado coming. Don't you move. You go away from it. You don't go towards it. Like, this is calling a movie like Vampire, and it's about people who want to have their blood sucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have no desire. Tackle.
tackle?
Yeah, I loved the Universal ride Twister. They tore that down finally, didn't they?
Yeah, all the classic Universal rides are around now.
Yeah, I loved that. The movie was all right. I remember seeing it in the theater. It was a fun, you know, popcorn movie. Yeah. Why? I think maybe, Justin, the only reason they have to remake this is because there were no cell phones prevalent. You know, the whole opening scene with everyone's cell phone going off. That is the only reason I think they need to redo it. That's just for that scene. Could you just take that scene and insert it at the beginning of the original movie, and then the whole movie would be the same, right? Tackle.
Probably.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Mufasa, the Lion King. What? William, I don't understand. Okay, so this is a prequel to the supposedly live-action remake of The Lion King. First of all, if you're going to do a prequel to The Lion King that's animated, because I don't buy this BS that these Lion King movies are live action. If you are making CGI animals do things, that is just a different form of animation. Okay? There is no live action Lion King movie. Unless you are actually filming lions doing actual things and somehow editing it together to make the movie. Otherwise, it's just different animation. It's naturalistic animation.
Thank you.
That's the first thing.
I was going to say that.
It's naturalistic animation. You were going to say it? You were going to steal my jam? My vibe? That's my thing.
I was.
100%.
Second of all, we know the Lion King remake was all about communism and nihilism. They turned Hakuna Matata into a nihilistic anthem. They turned the whole thing into a communist metaphor. I said that when I saw it. Now, why would you not, if you wanted to do a Mufasa prequel, make it animated? That is the iconic version of the character. James Earl Jones is the iconic voice. He is still alive. Why would you take the role from him? Second of all, isn't the value of Mufasa in the original Lion King that you are taking on the perspective of Simba, so when he dies, he seems like this grand, epic character because you don't know how he became king, and he was just always a powerful king that you admired and looked up to? Aren't you going to take away some of that mystique and mythos by having this prequel? None of this makes sense except as a cash grab and a racist cash grab. Because they're going to code this movie as black because it takes place in Africa. So, of course, any movie that takes place in Africa must be a black movie. So we're going to put, more Beyonce in it. And we're going to put other black actors in it. Everything about this upsets me. Tackle.
Tackle.
Justin, not only that, they've reused the visuals from the animated movie. Right? Did you see all those visuals that were just reused from the original movie?
I thought that was intentional as a nod to the original movie.
I don't know. Maybe I'm too pessimistic. I think it's just they're just painting by the numbers. They don't know how to do anything creative, right? This is naturalistic animation. I think think of all the wasted talent making something like this rather than actually pushing forward animation, right? Like this is animation as an art, right? Not a technique. Like this is all just stupid, right? What kids are going to want to see this? And then who's going to go see this? Do you really think this is going to be a giant hit, Justin? Like you say, it's a cash grab, but I don't understand how people will want to see this after the flop after flop of the other ones, right? Like didn't the Little Mermaid one just do terrible?
Well, I want to be clear here. When I use the term cash grab, I don't mean I think it's going to make a lot of money. I mean the people who greenlit it thought it was a cash grab. That they're trying to trade on the popularity of a franchise.
They've got a lot of names, right? Isn't Lin-Manuel Miranda on this?
Yes.
And a bunch of other... Yeah, they've got a lot of names. So, okay. Well, yeah. I don't think I'll be seeing this at all. So, tackle.
Tackle.
All right, that brings us to the end of this edition of Welcome to the Midside. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that when I someday when I have a son and he's a 40-year-old, he'll be running college campus protests. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I learned that that son will also be afraid of bears because of what you will have taught him.
True.
Get it?
100%.
100%.
All right. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. If it wasn't for you, it would just be me talking to the corner of my closet like a crazy person. It still is that. You just make me feel a little bit less crazy. If you want to support us, you can go to themidside.com/store, pick up some merch, themidside.com/Patreon, or themidside.com/locals. You can toss us a few bucks there, or you can go on Fountain and toss us a few sats. I hate the word sat. It should be like stats or something. This is how we keep the lights on. And of course, if you want to help grow the show, the best way to do that is to tell a female friend. Tell a female friend because we don't hate women on this show. We were just talking about the story. The value that women present is immense. And one of it is growing our show because they are uniquely able to do something like that. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a protest-free day. I have to admit, when I did see the list of trailers at first and it said Thelma, I thought you were going to make me watch the Thelma season 2 trailer, and I was very scared.
There's a show, Thelma season? What's that about?
You don't want to know, but okay. Mindy Kaling made a Scooby-Doo.
Oh, Velma, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said Thelma. I thought it was a Thelma and Louise like prequel or sequel. So I only put it on out of morbid curiosity, and then I watched it. I was like, hey, this is a pretty good trailer.
Yeah.
That was my surprise of the week. That trailer was my surprise of the week.
Excellent.